Chapter 20. On the way to Nagpur prison. Taking into consideration the long journey I had to undertake, a superintendent sanctioned some sugar, fine flour, and other foodstuff to enable me to prepare some dry food, panjiri, for the journey period, which I packed up in my iron utensils and kept it wrapped in the prayer carpet. Those who were about to depart were ready. As we met those left behind for the last time, embracing one of them, some of them burst into tears. The painful scene of separation from friends who loved us so much, surprised by the Congressite prisoners of Madras. They were wonderstruck by the genuine and deep love which took the form of tearful separation. The prison officials were not anxious to send us off. Mr. Davis stood before us and addressed us for the last time thus. We have been extremely friendly and humane in our treatment of all political prisoners. As human beings, it was our duty to do so. Your attitude towards the staff was very gentle, polite, and dutiful. As long as you were here in this prison, I have never considered you or treated you as prisoners. So today, I do not want you to leave this place as prisoners. Neither is the dress given to you for the journey that of prisoners, nor will any of you will be handcuffed like prisoners. I am confident and earnestly hope that you will honor the trust we have in you. Then Mr. Davis turned towards me and said, if you take responsibility for this Rajput Prithi Singh, he will also go without being handcuffed. Mr. Davis considered Prithi Singh a habitual absconder, and he feared that he might put him into trouble if he was allowed to go without handcuffs. I refused to take any responsibility for him and asked Mr. Davis and his colleagues to handle the matter in the way they thought best. Those good people, particularly the gentle superintendent, took a word of honor from Prithi Singh that he would not betray the authorities. He was frankly told that he would be given the same facilities and freedom to travel without handcuffs as were given to Punjabi prisoners if he gave assurance on oath that he would not try to escape or abuse any facility and freedom given to him during the journey. Unhesitatingly, Prithi Singh promised on oath, in our presence, that he would not try to escape or abuse any freedom given to him. Impressed by his solemn promise, the Chelan police officers did not handcuff him. As a matter of fact, Mr. Davis and his police party did not carry any handcuffs or chains with them. They just accompanied us as our bodyguards. There were two police inspectors, one Englishman and the other Indian, along with five policemen who carried our luggage. All our luggage was carried by the policemen, while we walked along with them, quite pretentiously. The brother patriots came to the gate to wish us goodbye. It was the end of November when we left for Nagpur. From the prison, we were taken to the railway station on a bullock cart. A group of patriots were waiting for us near the waiting room, where we were to wait for the train. These patriots, Deshbhagats of Rajamundri, had brought for us fresh fruit and some dry fruit and sweets. They offered these things to us in such abundance that we had to carry them with us. Such was their selfless devotion that we could not refuse their offerings of love. The tables in the waiting room were loaded with fruit and sweets, which everyone ate to his fill. I also took some fresh and dry fruits. There was an old South Indian patriotic mother, whose son, Dr. Subramanian, was still in prison for the cause of freedom. She offered many things and served the prisoners with great devotion and motherly affection. The police officers watched in respectful silence. Then there was some conversation between the political workers and leaders. Some leaders of Andhra Pradesh also came there, amongst whom was the eminent leader, Mr. Sambamurthy. They started delivering lectures to the crowd that had gathered there, and my name was particularly mentioned. Prithi Singh and Pandit Jagat Ram also spoke. At last the train was about to arrive, and we made preparations to board the train. A number of patriots accompanied us for a long distance in the train. There was a long stoppage at Secunderabad station, where we took our bath. As we sat in contemplation of his name and the morning prayer, The train covered a long distance. On the way, I wrote the following letter to Gyani Nar Singh. We are now on our way to Nagpur, which is in CP, presently in MP, Madhya Pradesh. We are coming nearer and nearer to Punjab. By the grace of the Guru, when I am transferred to Punjab, it will, I hope, be for release, and that is what you wish. We are four political prisoners who are now being taken without handcuffs or chains. They have also given us good clothes. In a hurry, I cannot write more now. I will write on reaching my destination. Greetings to all friends. The train reached Nader Station. I heard a porter crying, "Anyone getting down here in Nader?" When I came out of the meditative mood, the train was not moving, and once more I heard the porter's cry, "Anyone getting down at Nader?" The very moment, the name of the holy place where Guru Gobind Singh Ji spent his last days entered my ears. I almost lost my body consciousness. My astral body plunged out and lay prostrate in salutation to the holy city, while my physical body was lying listless on the train. In a spiritual vision, I saw the radiant face of the beloved Guru Gobind Singh. Within a moment, my inner eyes had a glimpse of the splendid sights. The whole atmosphere was filled with light and waves of ambrosial joy, which thrilled my whole being. Within this dawn-lit atmosphere, I could see, in a vision, the eternal personality of Guru Gobind Singh in full radiance, shedding light all around. I wanted to circumambulate around it in humble homage and reverence, but I could not. Someone lovingly uttered these words in my ears, "Rise and regain normal consciousness. The time has not come. You will, by the will of God, get an opportunity to come as a pilgrim again. Abide by his sweet will." When I regained consciousness, the train was on the move. When the British police office inspector inquired and was told about the cause of impatient and tearful condition, he was deeply moved. He said that if he had been told earlier at Secunderabad, he could, by his own authority, break journey at Nader for 10 hours and give us an opportunity to pay homage to the holy place. Now he did not know how he could be of any help. I thanked him for his genuine and profound sympathy. As the train moved on, my heart still yearned for the pilgrimage, and every breath that came out was a passionate yearning for one glimpse of the sacred place. In this condition, I wrote the following letter to Gyani Nar Singh. We have just passed Hazur Sahib Nader. Our train reached Nader at 9 p.m. I could not control my tears. The thought that I was passing through the sacred place without paying homage to it was painfully unbearable. Such was the sweet will of the Lord. My pilgrimage to the sacred place will now be at some later date. The sanctity and the spiritual atmosphere of the place had its ambrosial effect on me, even as we passed through it in utter darkness. I could not control my tears. I was overwhelmed with the feeling of forced separation from the holy place through which I passed. Now we will pass through Manmad on our way to Nagpur. Meandering through places, we now entered Central Province. The train had not reached Nagpur when Prithvi Singh jumped out of the running train and made good his escape. It was late in the night when the policemen, having full confidence in every one of us, were sleeping headlessly. There were four policemen at the four doors, but even they were not in the least suspicious that any one of us would run away. So even they were careless and negligent in their watch. The incident took place when an Indian police inspector was on duty. He was also sleeping. The British police inspector had some suspicion about Prithvi Singh. He suddenly woke up and found Prithvi Singh missing. He was seriously upset. He woke up everyone. Brother Kartar Singh woke me up and told me that Prithvi Singh had escaped. My first reaction was that he had committed a thoroughly wicked deed. After giving his word of honor and promising on oath, he should not have done such a thing. Bhai Kartar Singh also condemned it. The policeman on duty was questioned. He informed us that he had gone to the lavatory and had not come back. When the lavatory was examined, its window pane was broken. When the train had just started from Wardha station and was moving slowly, he broke the window pane and made good his escape. The policeman felt duped and confused. The poor old British inspector of police began to sob helplessly. We had assured him that on his return he would be promoted for his excellent service, but now he feared that he might even lose his job. He remembered his wife and children, and wept fearing that the whole family might have to suffer. We were deeply moved by his pitiable condition, and we consoled him, assuring him of all our moral support. What he feared was that every Indian would give evidence in favor of the Indian's inspector, and put him with the whole blame on him, because he was a white man. Bhai Kartar Singh and I assured him that we would stand for truth and justice, and we would frankly report that Prithvi Singh escaped when the Indian's inspector was on duty, and not when the Englishman was on duty. Why should we stain our soul by telling a lie? To support an Indian inspector for negligence of duty and put a white man into trouble was not patriotism. Our assurance for all moral support brought some solace to his troubled mind, and he stopped weeping. We kept our promise to him. When on our arrival at Nagpur, an inquiry officer came and questioned us. During the course of investigation, we pointedly said that the Englishman was not to be blamed, as the incident did not take place when he was on duty. The inquiry officer was impressed by the truth of our statement, and he admitted that Sikhs were free from the color of prejudice. He thanked us for saving the career of the old British inspector, who along with his family might have faced a terrible disaster if we had not told the truth. All Indian policemen had given false evidence against him and favored the Indian inspector of police. We do not know what was the evidence given by Pandit Jagatram, who was taken to Jabalpur prison. Only two of us were brought by the white inspector to Nagpur prison. All other prisoners and policemen went to Jabalpur. Only one policeman was sent back to report the escape of one prisoner at Rajahmundry. Both of us were taken on a tonga to Nagpur prison by the white officer. When we reached the prison gate, the British jailer had just come out of his residence and met us at the gate. We were there early in the morning. The first question he asked was, "Where is the third man?" In a frightened voice, the inspector said, "He ran away." The jailer angrily said, "Damn fool, you are done for. You may not only be dismissed, but may even have to go to prison." The poor man began to tremble pitiably. He was already very depressed. I whispered into the ears of the jailer, "Please do not frighten him so much. He is already feeling very miserable and terribly shaken, with a little more shock in his heart, and his heart may fail. Actually, he is not to be blamed." The jailer was a little impressed, so he consoled him. This encouraged him a little, otherwise he might have collapsed there and then. The jailer took us into the prison. The inspector followed us, carrying our luggage. The jailer took us to his office, and the inspector also followed us. Our dress impressed everyone so much that no one dared to search us. No one treated us as prisoners. After entering the office, the jailer gave a receipt of our takeover to the inspector who had brought us and asked him to go from where he came. I was deeply moved by the poor man's condition, so I requested the jailer to offer him some tea and breakfast, as he was so depressed that he had not taken anything so far. The jailer sent a prisoner to his house and procured some tea and biscuits for him, after taking which he gave a salute and went away, leaving us behind in the room. After examining our challan papers of Rajahmundry prison, and after some conversation with Brother Kartar Singh in English, the jailer at once gave orders that we should be taken to the civil wards. He asked a jail warder to carry our luggage, and then himself accompanied us to the civil ward and showed us the kitchen. There were 9 seats in this prison barrack, and in this small barrack, he placed two cane chairs and tables for us to do our work. We were happy that we were given a quiet corner, and we did not have to fight for any of our rights. We were to be kept apart from other prisoners. After taking permission from the temporarily posted superintendent and Englishman, the jailer allowed us to cook our own food. We were given the same rations which we got in Rajahmundry prison. This superintendent was posted there only for a month or so. The real superintendent was on leave. Both the jailer and the officiating superintendent gave us all the rights and facilities that we got in other prisons. We were allowed to retain our books, and some utensils were also procured for us. Our rations were fixed. We were given all the things we required, and we happily cooked our food. There was not so much work to be done. I cooked the meal, while Bhai Kartar Singh did some binding work for about 2 hours, then we were free. There was a large courtyard with a hand pump and well in it. We were permitted to do some gardening in the corner of the courtyard. Some seeds were procured. It was an ideal place for solitude and prayer. Bhai Kartar Singh was very happy about it, but I warned him that these unusual conditions may not last long. It may be that their policy might suddenly change. The jailer visited us a number of times daily and talked to us in a very pleasant manner. I was given permission to write religious books, but these joyous days did not last long. As soon as the officiating British superintendent went away, our happy days came to an end. Both of us, after being separated from friends, were now lodged in Nagpur jail. Prithi Singh escaped while we were on the way to this place. We are daily waiting for you here, but they may or may not bring you here. Both of us have been given a small airy and secluded barrack, which has 9 rooms. We have occupied 2, and the other 7 are waiting for you. So if 5 of you come here, along with 2 more friends, the rooms will be full. We have been separated from all the other prisoners. No one is allowed to come near us, but within our area we can move about freely. We do not have any work. We cook our own food both times. We get about 2 chatak ghee for cooking food. When Bhai Kartar Singh gets fresh milk and tea also. There's a big dairy farm within the prison. I'm not allowed to milk a cow for myself as yet. They are afraid to take me to the dairy farm, while a cow cannot be brought to a courtyard. Anyway, be it so. If I succeed in getting milk, so much the better. Otherwise, it is all the same. The newly appointed superintendent here is a notorious Indian who dresses like Anglo-Indians, while the jailer is a white man. The jailer appears to be a good man. We have not been given new dresses. We are still wearing and keeping us the uniforms of Rajahmundry prison. We want exactly the same type of dress which we were given at Rajahmundry prison, but these people hesitate to do so. Let us see how things take shape. We have 4 blankets each. It is very cold here, though not as cold as it was at Hazaribagh. When we left Rajahmundry, Brother Sej was ill. Please write me about his condition. Convey my humble greetings to him. Has he memorized Asa Diwar or not? I learnt that Shiromani Gurdwara Prabandhak Committee is now prepared to reach an agreement with the government, and that the government has also stopped irritating the Sikhs. The Khalsa is taking over the control of the Gurdwaras one after another. It is now in very high spirits. I reached this place, Nagpur, on December 1st. According to the will of God, all our friends have been sent to different prisons. Only Bhai Kartar Singh, Canadian, is with me. I do not know where others have been sent. We have been given a small prison barrack in which there are 9 seats, but no one besides the 2 of us has been lodged in it. It is a calm and quiet place, good for solitary meditation. We have our own kitchen attached to it. By the will of God, the arrangement for the preparation of my food is gone. No one has caused any trouble. We do not have any good arrangements for getting dal and vegetables. We are just silent. Sometimes we get carrot and we cook it. Otherwise, we get chapatis with salt. We do not get good salt. The atta, the flour, which we get, is not good. It is mixed up with maize flour, which may spoil our health. I am now having some piles trouble also. If the diet continues to be as bad as it is, it may increase. We are quiet and submissive so far, but if the officers do not mend their ways, I may have to undertake a fast. The new superintendent is a lame and notoriously corrupt Hindu Brahmin, whose conduct appears to be wicked, unprincipled, and depraved. The jailer is a white man, but a very well-behaved person, who appears to be quite noble. He does not wish to cause trouble to any prisoner. Let us see what happens. No one is allowed to come near us. We are also not given any work. The only work we have is to cook our meals. We get an opportunity to take our bath early in the morning. There is a hand pump in our courtyard, and half of a well also opens into our courtyard. We are allowed to write only 1 letter a month. and to have one meeting a month with the relatives. The jailer had agreed to provide us daily newspaper also. As is given to political prisoners, but the superintendent has not agreed. He has allowed a periodical, a weekly or monthly, which we should get at our own expense. I told him that the government has confiscated my property also. How is it possible to get a newspaper at my own expense? There is already a great burden on the Sikh Panthic organizations. We pleaded that when other political prisoners were getting, why should we not get the newspapers? To this, his answer is that the rules have now been changed. He's just trying to ignore our demand. We are told that if some pressure is put from outside, then they will change. They have the impression that no one is prepared to fight for us from the outside, because we are from another province. Had we been prisoners of this province, everything would have been accepted. If the Sikh Review or some other monthly magazine is being published, please get it issued to us. Officially, we will get the letters also quickly, because there are many Sikhs in the provincial service here. They will get these letters read by them and pass them to us. There is one Sikh executive engineer here. They can get the letters read by him. He is also a friend of the jailer. He asked the same Sikh about the conditions I lay down about preparing my food myself. He told him that there are many Bibeki Sikhs, those who take food prepared by Amritdhari Sikhs alone, in the Sikh Panth, who observe these rules. I do not know the name of this Sikh, but from the superintendent, I learned that it is Sant Singh. There are innumerable Sikhs here, and there is a whole locality of Sikhs. There's also one or two Sikh temples. December 21st, 1922. Up to this day, I cook my own food. The lame officer is not well disposed to us. He is up to some mischief. This lame Brahmin has been appointed as a jail superintendent. He is also IMS medical officer. He was formerly an army doctor. He lost one leg in the war. People call him Captain Jatter. He wears a European hat. Although he calls himself a Hindu, he appears to be without any faith or creed. When we arrived at this place, he was on leave. During his absence, the gentle Englishman, who was officiating here, on his own responsibility, started treating us in a very humane way. After examining my history ticket, he immediately removed all hindrances and permitted me to prepare my own food. But the day the superintendent arrived, he stopped providing me dal and vegetables. I did not mind. I was content to take my chapatis with salt. Now he asked Inspector General Prisons in writing as to why I had been given permission to prepare my own food. He has asked for the revision of this order. I do not know what is the exact reply he has received from the Inspector General Prisons, but his intentions are mischievous, and we do not know what other harmful remarks he has passed in his appeal to the IG of Prisons. Most of the IG prisons follow what the superintendent prisons suggest to them. It now appears from his vexatious ways and methods that he is thinking of subjugating me to some severe physical tortures. I am fully prepared for the worst. He has already started threatening me with force feeding. He is bent on insulting my faith and forcing me to abjure my religious principles. To me, my religious principles are dearer than life. But this man does not care for religious principles and sentiments of anyone. May the Guru help me to uphold all the sacred principles which I have maintained for the last 7 years of imprisonment. But this one-legged tyrant is bent upon using force to attain his malevolent end. There are only two of us. Had there been more, the voice of protest could carry some weight. Finding that we are only two in number, he is determined to use violence. If he stoops to violence, God alone knows what may happen. He will try his best to prevent the news about our suffering from leaking out. We have been completely cut off from other prisoners, and not a soul knows of our existence here. So I am giving you this information in advance. When we are fighting this tyranny, this man will take strict measures to prevent the news from leaking out. At Rajamundri, The news leaked out immediately because there were many patriots in the prison. The news generally went to the newspapers. Here we do not know whether there are patriots in the prison, and the patriots do not know that we are here. If you do not receive any news within a week, then you may safely conclude that I have started the fast. We hear that there are many Sikhs in the railway workshop, but we have not been able to send any news to them so far. I learned that even the city superintendent of police is a Sikh. Anyway, we have no other way but to abide by the will of God, and the suffering that is preordained will have to be faced. Why should we seek mere human help? Of course, the news will upset you. I did not wish to send this unhappy news to you, but Brother Kartar Singh has compelled me to write about it to you and inform everyone through you. If possible, you can send information through a private letter, even to the IG prison and superintendent prison, and tell them that they are honor-bound to treat us as humanely as we were treated recently. Otherwise, we should be sent to our state. You may ask them whether we were sent to Central Province, now Madhya Pradesh, only to be tortured and put on the rack. We are kept in solitary confinement, and nefarious plans are being made to cause injury to our religious principles. If they do not take responsible steps to prevent it, then you can report the matter to the newspapers and bring it to the notice of the public. The superintendent said today that he does not know anything about our public importance. Ordinary people cannot be given any special treatment. I told him that there is no question of importance in public. The Sikh Panth knows about our position in the Sikh community. We are fighting for our religious rights, which we have been getting so far in the prison. If you do not leave us in peace, we shall have to fight for even those rights which should be given to political prisoners. This is what is happening here. The Lord's will shall prevail. Convey my request to all friends and devotees of the Panth to pray for me, so that I may stand firmly by my faith and ideals. If life and body ends in this struggle, I do not mind, but I may never be shaken in the noble principles of my faith. As soon as this lame superintendent, Dr. Jatar, took charge, he went on a round and first came to our barrack. A head warder who accompanied him shouted, "Sarkar Salam, I humbly salute thee, my ruler." I saw an Indian officer wearing a European hat coming towards us along with his staff. He was limping on his way towards us. When he came near to us, I smiled. Bhai Kartar Singh, guessing the meaning of my smile, whispered into my ears, "Is he not the same hermit with the trident which you saw in your vision just a month before leaving Rajamundri prison?" "Yes, he is the same man," said I. "He has come now to wreak vengeance upon me. Whatever is ordained by the sweet will of God will happen." I had just finished kneading flour in the kitchen. Bhai Kartar Singh was setting up the chair and doing his work. The new superintendent shouted at Bhai Kartar Singh and said in English, "Why did you not stand up?" Bhai Kartar Singh says, "In the last two prisons, we had orders not to stand up while we were working, when the superintendent came on a round. As a matter of fact, we were not expected to stand up even when the IG prisons came. We were expected to be busy with our work. Thinking that this was the practice here, I continued my work." The superintendent replies, "No, this is not the practice in this jail. The order here is that whenever the superintendent comes on a round, all prisoners must stand up." Bhai Kartar Singh replies, "All right, in future it will be so. We will give up work and stand." In English, the superintendent replies, "You will have to obey all the rules of this prison." "We will obey only legitimate rules," says Bhai Kartar Singh. On that day, the superintendent went away after talking to us in this haughty manner. In the evening, the jailer came to us on his bike in a puzzled state of mind and told us that he had brought a special order from the superintendent, Captain Nilkant Surya Jatar. The order was that whenever he came on a round, we must all stand up with our hands spread out like beggars. He showed us how it was done. We told the jailer to go and inform the superintendent that we will never stand with our hands spread out like that before any human being. We will never and never stand out in that position. The jailer whisked away as soon as he heard a refusal to obey such humiliating order. Early next morning, the superintendent came with all his staff, burning with rage, and as soon as he came, he started spitting fire. "Look here," he said, "you will have to obey all my orders in this prison. Why did you not say Sahib Salam? And why did you not stand up with your hands spread out, the way the jailer explained to you yesterday?" I tell him, "We will only obey legitimate orders. We will not obey illegitimate orders. To stand with our hands spread out like beggars before such a petty creature like you is most humiliating for a Sikh, and it is the greatest insult to Sikh pride and self-respect. No self-respecting Sikh is prepared to stand like that before anyone except his Guru and God. So do not even in a dream expect us to stand before you with our hands spread out. It is not sufficient that we have agreed to stand up, is it? Stand up when you come here. And may I make it clear that even this will be done only as long as you behave like a decent officer and treat us with respect. If your treatment is bad, and if you carry out any of your illegal threats, we will not even stand up when you come." "What, will you not obey jail orders?" the superintendent says. "We will never obey any illegal and humiliating orders," Bhai Kartar Singh replies. "Is it an illegal order?" he says. Bhai Kartar Singh replies, "If it is legal, then show us in which prison manual it is written that political prisons should be made to stand in such a humiliating position. We have been lodged in the prisons of many states, and no one has asked us to stand like that. It is also not given any prison manual that the superintendent is authorized to treat the prisoners in the manner you are treating us." The superintendent says, "Look here, even eminent disciples of Mahatma Gandhi, like Lala Jamna Das, Mahatma Bhagwan Din, and other prominent members of Congress have stood before me like that, with their hands spread out as long as they were in my prison." We tell him, "It is not necessary for us to do what the disciples of Mahatma have been doing. We are not the disciples of Mahatma Gandhi, nor would we likely to be one. We are the disciples of Guru Gobind Singh, and so we will remain. We will not tolerate any injury to our pride and self-respect as the Singhs of Guru Gobind Singh." The superintendent says, "Remember that both of you will have to suffer for disobeying this order." After giving out his threat, the one-legged fellow went away. The next day, the superintendent showed us a typed copy of an order which he said was sent by IG Prisons, but it was not signed by the IG Prisons. Only a head clerk had signed it. We were taken to the office, and this order was read out to us, which stated that we were deprived of all privileges given to the political prisoners. We shall, in future, we be given ordinary food which was served to all prisoners. We will get the clothes which were given to ordinary prisoners, and we shall have to obey all the orders of prison officers. After reading out this forged order, he asked us whether we had to say anything about it. He further asked us to sign and give written consent of obedience of the order. With one voice, we both replied, "We will never obey such forged orders, never and never." The superintendent replies, "How do you say that? This is a forged order." We tell him, "The first thing, that the order has not been sent to us, and it was not opened in our presence. If it really were the orders of the IG prisons, where is the necessity of getting our signature? The order has been addressed to the superintendent, and he has to carry out the order in his own responsibility, if it is indeed a true order. We will protest against this order. How can we give it in writing that we will gladly obey this order when we are not going to obey? If it is not a forged order, please show us the envelope so that we may examine the stamps on it." On hearing this, both of them became enraged, and in the heat of their anger, they wrote on our history tickets, "Their clothes should be taken away by force, and they should be given food from ordinary kitchen and be compelled to eat it. They should be deprived of all privileges given to political prisoners." After writing these orders, we were asked to go back to our prison cells. By Kartar Singh, asked the superintendent to reconsider this order and avoid trouble to us and to themselves. Trouble, the superintendent says. Who can put us in trouble? I tell him, your own evil deeds. My order stands, he said. I do not want to hear any other thing. We urged him to wait till we had consulted the higher authorities, particularly the Punjab government, about it. Till then, he could keep his orders reserved. After receiving the opium of the higher authorities, he could do whatever he liked. We asked for some time. We did not, till then, ask for any special privilege given to political prisoners. All we asked was for some atta to prepare our chapatis, which we could take with salt once in 24 hours. Shortly, we would receive a definite reply from the higher authorities and the Punjab government. But the superintendent did not listen to any reasonable suggestion. He was determined to carry out his threat. Then the only way we left was to go on fast and resist tyranny. There is a Persian saying, when tyranny befalls a dervish, he must be prepared to face it with his life. Thus, I was compelled to undertake fast.